Chapter 3. The Great Awakening. Gautama's thoughts kept returning to his questions. How does one end unhappiness and pain? How does one protect loved ones from sickness and death? Indulging oneself in sensual pleasures was certainly not the solution. The traditional beliefs had likewise failed to provide the way to end suffering. Many priests distanced themselves from the pain around them. They sacrificed animals while ignoring the cries of pain and terror as the animals struggled desperately to live. All life, human and animal, was to be protected and cherished. Thus, the traditional beliefs were not the answer either. Gautama also understood that his sitting in meditation, as instructed by the two masters, had not enabled him to elevate himself above worldly pain. As soon as he left his contemplative state, he returned to a world of birth, aging, sickness, and death. He had not yet found the way to end them. Extreme disciplines and intense deprivation were also not the answers. It was thought that if one practiced severe austerities, one could achieve rebirth in heaven. But even a lifetime in heaven would end one day, because the heavenly realms are still within the cycle of rebirth. And besides, the unhappiness and pain of those who remained on earth would still continue unabated. Torturing one's body results in the mind being afflicted as well, not in its finding peace. So while the body is not to be indulged, it should not be abused either. It is much wiser to properly care for one's body so that it is able to carry one along the path to enlightenment. Gautama's ascetic practice, which sought to remove desire, had resolved nothing. Mind and body are not separate. They are intrinsically linked to each other. No, abusing one's body would not help one to find the answer either. After 6 years, Gautama realized, just at the point of death, that what he had achieved in all his practice would only benefit himself temporarily. All around him, humanity was still suffering. Gautama would have to find the way himself. It seemed to lie in a more balanced approach to meditation. He would later use the example of a lute. If the strings of the lute were too tight, the sound would be unpleasant, and the strings would most likely break. If they were too loose, the sound would not be harmonious. The strings needed to be properly tuned to produce a pleasing sound. Just as the beauty of a lute can only reveal itself when the strings are properly tuned, the attainment of serenity can only be found when one's life is well balanced. One needed serenity as well as compassion and wisdom to end humanity's pain and unhappiness. Understanding what he needed to do, the once future king sat down on a pile of grass beneath the tree he had often sat under and slowly assumed a meditation position. He vowed that even if only his skin, sinews, and bones remained, and his blood dried up and flesh withered away, he would not stir from his seat until he had attained supreme perfect enlightenment. He heard the gentle sounds of birds and insects, and the murmur of the river. He felt a soft breeze against his skin. The air smelled fresh. He lightly closed his eyes. Slowly, the breeze died, and the sounds around him became mere whispers. Perfectly calm on the outside, alert and determined within, he was ready. As he moved with ease deeper into his meditation, Mara came. Mara is all that is negative within us and arises when we wish to awaken from our seemingly endless sleep. Mara brought forth many demons, including those of egotism, doubt, passion, pride, and ignorance, to destroy Gautama's resolve and attainment. Gautama subdued them all. He moved deeper still into meditation, into a state unfathomable to ordinary beings, as if he was on a high mountain, looking down at every river he had crossed and every rock he had scaled on the way to reaching the summit. He clearly saw all his past lives. They were joined by a seemingly unbreakable karmic chain that bound him to countless births and rebirths without reward or respite. He moved deeper still into his meditative state and saw formation and cessation. He looked beyond this world to other galaxies throughout the universe and saw worlds take form, exist, and then end. He saw innumerable beings passing through countless lifetimes, still lost, still wandering. He saw the eternal law of cause and effect that governs all worlds, including ours, working in all aspects of our lives. He understood how current actions, speech, thoughts, everything determined the future. Good produces good, evil incurs evil. Causes mature into results that in turn become new causes. Thunder cracked, lightning tore the sky, and rain poured down, soaking Gautama, who remained motionless throughout. He continued his inward quest. He saw that the poisons of greed, anger, arrogance, and doubt are all rooted in our ignorance. With giving, we can let go of greed. With patience, we can dissolve anger. With wisdom, we can sweep away ignorance, arrogance, and doubt. People behave as they do because of past thoughts, words, and actions, but they do not know this. One person will act out of ignorance, while another will react from the same ignorance, and so they become more tightly bound to each other. All humanity, all beings, are bound by that slim, invisible chain that strangles all who do not see. This chain is ignorance, and only the sword of wisdom, which arises when one is selfless, can sever it. When one lets go of ego, one sees that we are all one, that we are all interrelated. Gautama transcended the ordinary levels of consciousness. Finally, he found the answers he had been seeking. They would become the core of his teachings, the Four Noble Truths. Life is suffering. Suffering is caused. Suffering can end. The way to its end lies along the path of discipline, concentration, and wisdom. The black clouds cleared. The thunder and lightning ceased. As he looked up and gazed at the sky, he knew he had found the way to supreme enlightenment. Ignorance leads to craving, craving to rebirth, rebirth to suffering. Suffering has a cause and an end. No longer would he have to be reborn. For him, the chain no longer existed. He had severed it with the sword of wisdom. He was fully liberated. This was his last birth. He smiled as he gazed upon the new dawn. There was no more pain, no more sorrow, only infinite peace and a profound, unconditional love for all beings. Now, after his innumerable lifetimes wandering through the valley, his growing discontent as the prince named Siddhartha, his 6 years of striving as the wandering seeker Gautama, and his night of awakening, he had finally reached the summit and found the way to teach all beings how to end their pain and unhappiness. He was now Buddha, fully awakened. Gautama remained in the forest for 49 days and thought of how to teach others what he had just experienced. He had finally perceived everything, and in doing so, eliminated the ignorance that bound him. But the rest of humanity was still trapped in ignorance, being able to see only a minute portion of the universe. They were easily misled by misperceptions and personal views. They could not yet truly see. They did not yet realize that everyone has within themselves the same nature that he, the Buddha, has. Today, we still do not truly see. Indeed, every living being has this true nature. Thus, all beings are, by nature, equal. By nature, no human is superior to any animal or any living being. Like Gautama, humanity has the ability to discover the undistorted truth of the universe. If people can discover this truth, they too can liberate themselves. And so it was time to teach what he had learned. He used different methods to teach different people. To teach those who were learned, he used logic and his understanding of the religious teaching. For those who were intuitive, he used images and actions, not speech. For those who were simple, he spoke only a few necessary words. And for those who were suffering, he showed that all beings underwent pain and unhappiness. It was time to leave the peace of the forest. First he looked for Master Alara Kalama and Master Udaka Ramaputta, and then his 5 former companions, for he knew they were ready to understand what he could teach them. Wearing the robe provided by the girl who had given him the rice milk, he set out. On the way, the Buddha met a monk who had been a student of the 2 masters he was seeking. He learned from the monk that both of his teachers had died. Regretfully, it was too late to share what he had learned with the 2 accomplished masters who so generously taught him everything they knew. He then inquired about the 5 ascetics and learned where they were practicing. The Buddha headed north to find them. After many days of walking, he reached Deer Park, where the 5 were staying. When they saw him approaching, they discussed what to do. They remembered how he had stopped his austere practice, begun to eat more, and interacted with the local people. They had rejected and left him. Now, here he was again. They decided that they would pay no attention to him and not even stand to properly greet him. But as the Buddha approached, they were unable to ignore him. His appearance was radiant, his bearing dignified yet gentle. The five ascetics had achieved much understanding. Perhaps they realized that this was no longer an ordinary man. They quickly took his begging bowl and gave him a stool to sit on and some fresh water to drink. Only then did they sit down on the ground around him. The Buddha told them that he had found what they were seeking. At first, no one spoke. Then they questioned, how could one who had abandoned his ascetic ways and begun eating more food have possibly found the way? The Buddha asked if they had ever heard him lie or previously claim that he had achieved the way. They replied that they had not. Then would the five listen to him so he could tell them what he had learned? They requested the Buddha to teach them. The Buddha told them that what he had learned was not the result of any analytical thinking, but of having seen reality. Those who seek the way should neither immerse themselves in sensual pleasures, nor deprive their bodies of essential needs, but follow the path of moderation. He explained that all beings who live in this world are subject to four basic truths. The first three are that suffering exists, it is caused, and it has an end. The fourth truth explains how to end suffering through the proper practice of discipline, concentration, and wisdom. This course of conduct neither denies nor avoids suffering. It faces suffering and transforms it. The practice of discipline, concentration, and wisdom will ultimately lead one to liberation, peace, and joy.